The first thing I'd like to do is Ray Burton was unable to be here this afternoon, so he sent a very short message that he wanted read. And it said, Rick, this is my statement. This proposed project is not one of those issues that will blow over and be forgotten 6 months from now. The Northern Pass Power Project is not needed. Start with a place called America. We need to help power generators from New Hampshire. And that was his statement. He was the first public official to come out against this project publicly. And I think that he is responsible for Charlie Bass starting to take the position that he has taken. I'm just going to read a couple of quick things here. But before I do, this isn't a north and a south issue. I've said this before. It starts in Pittsburgh and ends at the Mass line. And there are some people here today from down below, including myself. My wife and I were born and raised in Lancaster, New Hampshire. We've raised our family in the state, and we moved to Colebrook, 36 miles north, and we were called Flatlanders. We then built a house in Stewartstown, which was 6 miles north of Colebrook, and the Stewartstown people called us Flatlanders. So it all started at Plymouth Rock, but I would like to, just for general information, especially for Mr. and Mrs. Joe Chase, when I first met John Amy in his barn, I had no intentions of getting involved in this battle. It wasn't my fight, and it wouldn't affect my family or our land or anything else. After a two-hour discussion with John in his barn, I made known to him that my great-aunt taught school in Pittsburgh for 50 years. And he said, who was your great-aunt? And I said, Junie Aldridge. And he said, my God, she was old when she taught my father. And she also taught John, and my grandmother is a native of Pittsburgh, and she was a Scott. Her name was Eva Scott, not married to Fred Joe, but the other one. So I do have roots up here, and because of that, I think maybe that's John's honesty is what got me into this battle. I just want to state a couple of things. The Department of Energy, I've made this statement, and it is no longer on their website, so I guess I made it too often. But in 2009, the department budget for the Department of Energy was $23 billion, with over 100 federal and contracted employees, and they are to make the decision for us on the presidential permit. And yet that department has not made this country one barrel of oil, 1 gallon of gas, or 1 kilowatt of electricity dependent. So keep that in mind. I have here an article that I'm just going to read two sentences from it to give you an idea of what is going on here. It's called the Merrylink Connecting Line from Victoria and South Australia. The order was placed by Merrylink Transmission Company Pty, a subsidiary of TransEnergy, the transmission division of Hydro-Québec. As a result, it is especially well-suited for energy trading applications and to reduce impact on the landscape. And this is a 180-kilometer high-voltage DC line that was buried in Australia. And they're telling us they cannot bury it here. I don't want it buried here. I don't want it here, but, you know. My talk this afternoon is going to be a little bit different than most people's. I've handed out these papers, and they're on each table. And what this is it's New Hampshire's 50-meter wind power. And what people do not realize is the entire town of Pittsburgh has been mapped for wind generators. And the only way they can get this AC wind power south is to underbelly or build it underneath the DC high-voltage transmission line. So this is not just about a high-voltage transmission line from Canada going to the southern part of this state, Connecticut, Mass, Connecticut, and New York. The report that I want to talk about this afternoon is called the New Hampshire Public Utilities Commission Background Report on New Hampshire Transmission and Infrastructure. It was presented to the General Court in the state of New Hampshire December 1st in 2007. This report was commissioned. It was done by and approved by our legislature, our Senate, and our governor. And as Mr. Lamb has stated, we have not held our public officials accountable. There are a number of people in this room here today whose land is going to be impacted by this, but there are also many of us in this room today whose land will not be impacted by it. And I think it's important to know that my land not being impacted is just as important as Mr. Amy's or Mr. Dennis's or Mr. McCulloch's, because it will be affected. This is a battle that involves the entire state and every citizen in it. There's a lady in the back of the room there that has gone to Concord with us twice. She spoke at hearings. She's been to the scoping hearings, Pam Frizzell, and I don't dare to let her up here today. Because at one of the hearings, I believe when she was speaking, Mr. Murray left the hearing, and she snidely interrupted her testimony and said, what was it, goodbye, Mr. Murray? It went right over most people's heads, but it didn't go over mine or his. But the first thing I'd like to look at, and I have a copy of this report over here on the table, and I can give you online where you can get it. And I'm just going to briefly buzz through it and read the things that I've highlighted so that you will know this is not a project that was started 2 years ago with this permitting process. This project was probably started 8 to 12 years ago. But in 2007 is when they brought it before this state to change our laws to make it possible. We defeated House Bill 302, which was intended to make Hydro-Québec green and renewable, of which 3% of their power is nuclear, and they also have coal and oil-fired fossil fuel plants, so that company is not green and renewable. But what I intend to show through this report is that our legislature, either knowingly or unknowingly, have helped to get this project at the stage that it is. If they did it unknowingly, then as legislators, they did not do their job, because their job is to protect us and our state. If they did it knowingly, then they did it and they perjured themselves and their beliefs and they've sold us down the river. That's a personal opinion.
That's a surprise.
Yeah. The first thing I'd like to read is it's contained on page 11 and it's talking about the Coos County Loop, which I was against from the beginning and I still am, and it says, and this is a quote from the report, Public Service Company of New Hampshire has stated that the existing transmission system in the area is adequate to support the existing load and expected load growth for many years. According to Public Service Company of New Hampshire, the Coos County Loop could support approximately 100 megawatts of the new generation in the area without significant transmission upgrade. Page 13, a bulk power supply facility is defined generally as an electric transmission line rated at 100 kilovolts or more associated with a generating facility over a route not already occupied, which means Pittsburgh. An electric transmission line rated at 100 kilovolts or more longer than 10 miles over a route not already occupied. On page 16, it refers to the process for transmission development. Stakeholders provide input throughout the process. A stakeholder is a shareholder, or a company that's going to receive benefit. It is not a ratepayer. It is not a customer. It is not us. Page 26 refers to the term existing loop herein means existing after being upgraded by resagging to carry 100 megawatts, which should be sufficient to accommodate the first project in the Qui, the first Noble Wind project. Does it take an engineer to realize that the first means there's going to be a second and maybe a third and a fourth? This might affect the Danises. They have read this report. But on page 27, it says, to accommodate 400 to 500 megawatts of additional generation resources, mainly located in the portion of the loop from Whitefield to Dumma. It then goes on to say it would also allow the option of transferring the 100 megawatt connection for the first Noble Wind project. Page 29, I thought, was one of the more interesting parts that I highlighted. It says, therefore, while this opposition is theoretically feasible, they're talking about us Hicks up here as being oppositions, I suppose, it may not be acceptable to generators or, more to the point, their investors or lenders. On page 30, a filing with FERC, this may or may not have been done depending on the specific circumstances, which it has been done, for a change to the existing tariff affecting New Hampshire would have to be made. This change would allow the connecting generators to be charged only their portion, their prorated share of the total transmission cost, less the cost of any desired surplus transmission, which would be paid by some combination of ACP's IGGI funds and a ratepayer assessment. Us, the ratepayers. Page 33 and 34 says recover the cost from the corresponding TO. Transmission operating system will recover this money from the end users, being the ratepayers, through two different cost allocation mechanisms: 50% allocation on subregional regional basis, depending on the voltage, with the remaining 50% allocated to the TO's customers, which we are the customers. Yes, it is, Donna. Page 37 is what John had referred to a little bit earlier. Commissioner Barlow participated in the 10-5-07 meeting of the NEG-ECP-NIC, where representatives of the Eastern Canadian Provinces identified some 4,500 megawatts or more of renewable and no or low carbon emission resources that could be available for firm export to New England over the next decade. NIC specifically asked ISO New England, which is a small Enron that controls your power, who it's sold to and for how much, Hydro-Quebec Trans Energy HQ, the transmission system operator for Quebec, and the New Brunswick system operator, to undertake a coordinated conceptual review of potential transmission upgrades that could support these types of imports. Commissioner Bilodeau advocated at the meeting that such a review should include integration of potential renewable generation resources in northern New Hampshire, as well as Maine and Vermont, and an examination of possible synergies between transmission to integrate New England renewable sources and increase import capability from Canada. He also spoke of potential of the potential for Canadian Resources to help balance intermittent wind generation resources, as inland wind generation tends to have relatively high output during winter peak periods, with Canadian export capabilities are most limited, but relatively low output during summer peaks when Quebec has the greatest surplus export capability. Representatives of New Brunswick, Quebec, and Hydro-Quebec expressed interest in further studying this possibility, including receptive to examining possibilities of transmission upgrades to AC lines in the Hydro-Quebec high-voltage DC corridor, not right-of-way, not power line, corridor, that might support integration of Northern New Hampshire's renewable generation, increased import capability, and possible tie and reliability benefits in intermittent resource balancing synergies. I've got one thing highlighted here especially. It says fuel diversity and availability. Develop diverse energy technologies such as renewable sources of energy, distributed generation, imports from Eastern Canada and New York, and new coal and nuclear technology. And yet they want to be classified as green. The New Hampshire Public Utilities Commission has been advocating for ISO New England to conduct an economic study of transmission to integrate new renewable electrical generation, including in particular for Northern New Hampshire. The overall purpose of such a study would likely to be developed and applied to three cases, including Northern New Hampshire, a framework to analyze potential transmission upgrades to integrate new renewable electrical generation resources, including the possibility of increased imports from no or low carbon emission generation resources from outside New England, particularly Quebec and the province of Atlantic Canada. On page 40, this is an extra challenge, though, for the Coos County Loop, because the present FERC approval ISONE transmission tariff does not allow for pooling or socialization of the cost of upgrading transmission in a loop such as the Coos County Loop. The Coos County Loop, being a loop, provides no parallel capacity to the PTF and thus is not classified as PTF, and that PTF is pooled transmission facilities. So because at this point that the Coos Loop does not integrate outside of itself, it would not qualify, and they're trying to change that. In conclusion, Senate Bill 140, which was passed in 2007, the legislature took the first step in the process of informed decision-making when it identified as a problem the need to upgrade the electric transmission system in northern New Hampshire in order to accommodate the construction of the sizable wind and biomass generating facilities critical to achieving the benefits of House Bill 873. And that's the governor's 25 by 25 goal. This is a 50-page report, but I'm down to the last three pages. So, on page 43, stakeholders in Merchant Transmission Company. As noted in section 5, one of the options would be allow a private developer to invest in a transmission upgrade in return for equity stake in the project and the opportunity to earn a return on its equity and investment, and creating a public-private partnership with a merchant transmission company that would be allowed to use the utility's existing right-of-way. While real progress has been made through these discussions in achieving a better understanding among the stakeholders, not us, the stakeholders, concerning the nature and magnitude of the challenge, more work needs to be done.
Rick, why are you leaving out regular people as stakeholders? Is this your definition of stakeholders, or they've stated?
No. Public Service and Northeast Utilities has stated that stakeholders include investors, the companies, political figures, and important people in communities that would support the project. Those are the stakeholders. It comes up a lot.
The yep. definition of stakeholders in that type of context means people that have to have input, have to be included in order for you to go ahead. That leaves you up as people that have to do with making decisions within corporate America.
And on page 44, as a next step in the effort to find a workable solution, it may be useful to reconvene the Northern New Hampshire Electric Transmission Upgrades Ad Hoc Working Group. The Ad Hoc Working Group was initially established by Senator Fuller Clark as a forum for creative solutions associated with transporting renewable energy from Northern New Hampshire to the rest of the state and the region, and a means to achieve the upgrades to the system in a rapid fashion, as well as alternate methods to finance the project. Consistent with the Ad Hoc Working Group's intentions and working from the information contained in this report, the time is ripe for stakeholders to present detailed, concrete proposals for the legislature's consideration, in so much as most viable options will require some form of legislative action. The Public Utilities Commission will continue to work with interested stakeholders, assist the legislature in its efforts to develop a transmission solution for Northern New Hampshire, and advocate for New Hampshire's interest with FERC in regional bodies. That's pretty much a synopsis of what I have gleaned from this and just reading it a couple of times. Each time I read it, I seem to come up with something more. If you care to look at this map here that I placed on the tables, the diagram here is explained down here, and this is the most profitable wind solutions, I guess you would say. And this is Pittsburgh right up here. And this is Lake Francis, Connecticut Lakes, and this is the whole region that we're at right now. I won't give my personal opinion because it's not proper, I guess. But there's just a couple of other things I'd like to just quickly mention before Jim takes over. New Hampshire's got 6 small biomass plants right now that are in danger of closing. The legislature just passed some legislation, I believe, Larry, that's going to help the Laidlaw plant in Berlin come online. They're guaranteeing that plant, which we feel, or we think, has something to do with Hydro-Quebec, guaranteed rates to sell their electricity. Yet they will not enter into contract negotiations or even discuss anything with the existing 6 plants that we have. And what I think they're trying to do is force these plants out of business. I've also been in contact with the Hydro people. Between Hydro-Quebec and another company here in New Hampshire, it's American Great Lakes Hydro America. They own the Ponic Dam, 5 dams on the Androscoggin River. TransCanada owns Moore Dam, First Lake and Second Lake dams. And another one down south. No. I've got it in the list, and the list is on the table. But the point I'm trying to make, I guess, is that if they're saying we need hydro power, New Hampshire sells power right now, and we're not producing 100% of what we're capable of producing, excluding these dams that I just mentioned. So this is not, you know, I don't know how I can emphasize to you people, it's not just me and John and the guys that have spoke here today. You know, you can't believe the people that have donated $5 or $1 or written a letter. Every time somebody writes a letter or makes a phone call or speaks to somebody, they're helping. They're helping us, and that's what we need to do. It's
that is that there's Canadian companies coming in with all kinds of energy projects. For example, that wind park that's going from the town of Delmar into the unincorporated towns of Millfield and Dixville Notch was started by a company who has now sold it to Brookfield. Brookfield is a Canadian company. So you've got the wind and now the hydro, and there will be more.
It's like they're trying to monopolize their own natural resource.
Well, they've done that, Mark, and we've allowed them. We have a lot, and this is what Greg was alluding to. We have allowed this to be done, and what we need to do is we've got to look at the whole picture. I mean, for a long time, we've been talking about Hydro-Québec and this high-voltage DC line. That's all we've been talking about. The people up here are capable of understanding the big picture, and they can understand the big picture, but they have to know what it is, and we feel that now is the time that, you know, we've got to put everything on the table. We have done nothing below board. Everything that we have done as a group, individuals, or whatever, has been legal, it's been above board, and we have told people what we're doing. They change the playing field about every other week. This new route that they've come up with now over in the unincorporated towns, and something I want to emphasize, and I'm not asking for a pat on the back, but John and Jack and Dave and Jim and myself, we're here today at our own expense, on our own time, just as you are. None of you people have been paid to come here. But every time they hold a meeting, those people are paid, and they're paid big money. So it's, if you look at it and say, geez, you know, we can't fight this. Well, yes, we can fight it, but it's like the train. I tell people, you've got three choices. You can get on the train, you can stand and watch the train go by, or you can get out of the way. To me, the only choice is get on the train, because if you say it's a done deal or you think it's a done deal, don't bother getting on board. Because it's baggage we don't need. We need people that say it's not going to happen, no matter what. It is not going to happen.